But of course, the thing is it's still in the village. It's not as if it's, you know, some distant area somewhere. He's still in it. The monasteries are in the village. The forest monastery tradition is quite consciously separated a bit, but the so there was this ongoing connection with family, and then he ordained when he became 20 years old, ordained as a fully ordained monk, and but still living in, he lived in his home village monastery for a couple years, and then he did some study. And in those monasteries, I never had an introduction to meditation. It doesn't really play a part in the, say, village monastery life or village Buddhist life. Meditation, something a bit exotic, even a bit scary, so that for many years he studied, and it was about, and he was away studying at a, he'd done his basic studies, he was getting ready to do his formal scholastic degree, and it was just before his exams, He got news that his father was ill. So I'll read a little bit of that, because also part of it is the, again, this how both Ajahn Chah and most monks and people practicing are, and that connection between family is quite strong. So towards the end of that year, Lumpa received dismaying news. His father had fallen seriously ill. Lumpa's exams were to take place shortly, and if he went home now, a whole year's work would be wasted. Should he chance it and take his exams before going home? It was no choice at all. He only had one father, and exams could wait another year. He rushed home as soon as he could to find his father's condition in steady decline. Lumpa's father, Pama, was proud to have a son in the robes, and whenever Lumpa visited home, would always encourage him in his efforts and make a request. "Please don't disrobe, venerable sir. I invite you to remain as a monk indefinitely." This is a deliberately literal translation. It's hard to convey in the English language the tenor of a conversation between a Thai monk and his parents. Filial piety is greatly emphasized in Thai culture, and the relationship between parents and children is generally warm and close. Yet when the son becomes a monk, their way of relating to each other instantly and radically changes. The parents are now lay people. They sit on a lower seat at a respectful distance. They use monastic honorifics when referring to their son and humble personal pronouns when referring to themselves. To an observer from another culture, this formality might, at first, seem odd or perhaps unnatural. But for the family itself, it is simply the accepted convention. The stilted speech forms help everyone to remember that while the son's identity as a monk has not erased his identity as a member of his family, it has transformed it. Now, as he lay weak and shrunken on his deathbed, Poma made the request one last time. "You've made the right choice. Don't change it. Lay life is full of so many kinds of suffering and difficulties. There's no real peace or contentment in it. Remain as a monk." On previous occasions, Lumpa had always kept silent, his head slightly bowed, showing respect, but an unwillingness to make such a commitment. This time, however, he replied, "No, I won't disrobe. Why would I do that?" His father's face relaxed into a warm, contented smile, and he drifted into sleep. When Paul Ma discovered that Lumpa's exams would take place shortly, he urged him to return to his monastery. But this request was refused. Instead, Lumpa helped to nurse his father for the 13 more days and nights that he lingered on. It was December when the days have a drained, subdued tone and a cold wind blows down through Isan from China. When first thing in the morning, everyone lights fires outside their houses to warm themselves, and kites anchored high in the air utter their melancholy cry, tui tui, tui tui. They put on a kind of a bamboo thing onto the, and it makes a sound. And you hear it all through these nights. One day at the end of the year, Paul Ma's life came to its end. In the period following his father's death, Lumpa's monastic life began to follow a new direction. The change was almost certainly precipitated by his loss. Having for some years steeped himself in Buddhist texts, analyzing the human condition in general terms, he had come face to face with mortality on its most personal level. The human body is a mere conglomeration of the elements of solidity, fluidity, heat, and vibration. The inevitability of old age, sickness, and death, and of the separation from all we love. Prominent features of passages learned by rote in the monastery must have acquired much deeper meaning for him. Seeing his father in pain before death, helping place his lifeless body in the coffin, watching it burn on the funeral pyre, gathering the bones remaining in the cremation ashes, all would have made a profound impression on the young monk. Many years later, Lumpa recalled that on returning to Wat Ban Nong Lak, which was where he was studying, after his father's funeral, he made a solemn resolve. I dedicate my body and mind, my whole life, to the practice of the Lord Buddha's teachings in their entirety. I will realize the truth in this lifetime. I will let go of everything and follow the teachings. No matter how much suffering and difficulty I have to endure, I will persevere. Otherwise, there will be no end to my doubts. I will make this life as even and continuous as a single day and night. I will abandon attachments to mind and body and follow the Buddha's teachings until I know the truth for myself. As a result, Lumpa started practicing meditation more seriously, but not without difficulties. And this is Lumpa speaking again. The first year of meditation, I got nothing from it. My mind just teemed with thoughts about things I wanted to eat. It was really hopeless. Sometimes during a meditation session, it would be as if I was actually eating a banana. I could feel it in my mouth. The defilements had been in the mind for many lifetimes. When you come to discipline it, there's bound to be a struggle. So it isn't, I mean, Ajahn Chah had this tremendous resolve, but he also didn't find it easy. And I think that's something that as an example, his honesty in dealing with his difficulties was something that was really refreshing. And sometimes it's so easy to hear about spiritual masters or read a spiritual biography, and it's like it's just so depressing. You know, they come into the world enlightened, and then they just get even better. But Ajahn Chah was willing to speak about his the difficulties he had and training. His own mind, and that was something, as I say, that it was really very refreshing.